It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 258. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we have got a lot to talk about. The Phillies extend Aaron Nola. Huzzah! We've got some Bryce Harper updates. Not real updates, but we'll give you the latest on what's going on. And we're going to talk about Gabe Kapler's comments to the media during his news conference down in Clearwater here on Wednesday. I'm going to talk about all that stuff with Megan Montemuro, Phillies beat writer for The Athletic. We'll talk to her coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Plus, I will have your Aaron Nola-related stat of the week. But first, just a reminder, gang, please subscribe, rate, and review to the Good Fight podcast feed. Whether you're on Apple Podcasts, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, that's the place to do it. Give a rating, give a review. Tell friends who don't listen to podcasts about Hittin' Season, about continued success and the dirty inning. The Good Fight podcast feed, have them subscribe to The Good Fight on their Apple Podcast app. You could also tell your friends who use Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, whatever it is they're using, tell them to sign up and be a subscriber to The Good Fight and leave a rating and a five-star review when they get a chance. That goes a long way towards helping us get back into the top 200 of the sports and recreation in Apple Podcasts. And we were in the top charts last over the weekend, right after the JT Realmuto sighting. We were up to about 163 for a few days there. So we want to stay in that top 200, and we can only do that through your subscriptions, through your ratings, through your reviews, and through you listening to the podcast each and every time we have a new one out. So again, thank you so much for those of you who have already done that and who have been subscribers for quite a while now. All right, let's get into some of the baseball stuff. And we're actually not going to lead off the show today talking about a trade or a free agent signing. Instead, the Phillies have locked up their most important player, and he's here for the rest of his prime. Aaron Nola has signed a contract extension just one day before his arbitration hearing, and we are excited about it. I mean, there's really not a lot of analysis that's needed here. This is just great news. You did not want to have to go into an arbitration hearing with Aaron Nola, and you know, no player likes to hear the team that they play for explain why they're not worth the money that they're asking for. And so now, the Phillies and Aaron Nola agreed to a four-year contract extension worth $45 million guaranteed. Just last year alone, if you look at his wins above replacement per dollars, he was worth $30 million, and he didn't even come close to making that. So again, this buys out all of Nola's arbitration years, as well as the first year of his free agency. The team also has the option of buying out his second year of free agency if they want to. He'll be 31 when he hits free agency under this scenario. So again, the Phillies have locked up Aaron Nola for the entirety of his prime. And that is just, you know, in baseball, you look for that ace. You're always looking for that one ace starter, that guy to top a rotation, the guy who will end a losing streak, the guy to start game one of a playoff series. That's Aaron Nola. I mean, my man finished third in the National League Cy Young Award voting last year. He was fourth in ERA with a 2.37. He was fourth in quality starts with 25. Fifth in innings pitched with 212 and a third innings, and whip at 0.97. He was unbelievable. And while I think he'll probably take a small step back this year, he's due to regress a little bit, because what we saw from him last year was one of the greatest performances of any pitcher in Phillies history. So he's going to take a small step back, but he's still unbelievably good, and he is an ace starter. He'll make $11.25 million this season, which puts the Phillies' payroll for 2019 at about $166 million. So still well below the luxury tax, in case any of you care about that sort of thing. It makes Nola the fifth highest paid player on the team, behind Jake Arrieta, Gene Segura, Andrew McCutchen, and David Robertson, all guys signed within these last two off seasons, by the way. And had the case gone to arbitration, Nola would have been trying to get $6.75 million. The Phillies countered at $4.5 million, but now we get to throw all that out the window. Now, that $11.25 million, I said that it was for this season. That's actually not completely accurate. That $11.25 million is Well, it's the average annual value of his deal. So that's what it counts towards the luxury tax. What he actually gets for this year is he got a $2 million signing bonus, and his salary will be $4 million this season. So $6 million total for this year. Next year, he'll make $8 million. He'll make $11.75 million in 2021, and then $15 million in 2022. The club option for 2023 is for $16 million with a $4.25 million buyout, and there are a lot of escalators that could make this a more valuable contract depending on where he finishes in the Cy Young voting or if he wins Cy Young awards coming up here over these next few years, which is certainly possible. That'll make this contract even richer for him. And I was thinking about it. Aaron Nola has been one of the great first round picks, and certainly the best first round pick they've had in recent years. And I was wondering, even at this early stage of his career, where he's basically had three full seasons and all told, 3.5 seasons since coming up towards the latter part of the 2015 season. I was wondering, according to WAR, where does he rank among all-time Phillies first-round draft picks? Now, the Phillies do not have a ton of successful first-round draft picks to look back at, but they do have a couple. Really big, of course. And primarily, I mean, the guy at the top of the list is obviously Chase Utley, who was picked number 15 overall in the year 2000. He has a career 65.4 WAR, according to Baseball Reference. That probably isn't going to be topped by anybody that they draft anytime soon. Cole Hamels, picked number 17 in 2002, is second at 56.4. J.D. Drew is at number 3, but he never signed with the Phillies, of course. He finished his career with 44.9 WAR. He's third most on the team. Lonnie Smith, picked third overall in 1974, is fourth at 38.5. Greg Luzinski is fifth, taken 11th overall in 1968 at 26.3. John Stearns was taken second overall by the team in 1973. He's sixth all-time among Phillies' first-round draft picks with 19.7. Then you have Pat Burrell at 18.9 and Gavin Floyd at 15.6. And, of course, Floyd did not pitch for the Phillies either. That would not for long, anyway. That puts Nola in ninth place right now at 15.5. But again, he's just entering his fourth full season in the big leagues, and he just passed Mike Lieberthal and Brett Myers on the list of Phillies' first-round draft picks, according to WAR. So he's got a long way to go to catch Chase Utley, and maybe never will. Probably never will, because Chase Utley is a borderline Hall of Fame player. But when all is said and done, Nola will likely be in the top five, if not higher, when his career is finished, as long as he stays healthy. And it certainly looks like the Phillies have locked him up for what should be the healthiest years of his career. And they've given themselves a lot of stability for the future. As Matt Winkleman noted on Twitter, if you're looking at the last year of team control for the current Phillies, in 2020, that's when JT Realmuto, Cesar Hernandez, and Jake Arrieta can once again become free agents. In 2021, Michael Franco, Vince Velasquez, Hector Neris, Andrew McCutchen, and David Robertson become free agents. In 2022, Gene Segura, Odubel Herrera, Zach Eflin, and Jared Eichhoff become free agents. In 23, it's Nola, Hoskins, Pivetta, and Williams. 2024, Sir Anthony Dominguez. And in 2026, Scott Kingery. So a lot of these guys are going to be with this team for the next few years. This team has its core established, with the exception of one big name, and that is, of course, one of Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. And that's where we're moving on to now. And you'd like to think that the Aaron Nola extension would help them convince a free agent like Bryce Harper or Manny Machado that this is a desirable destination. This should be a team that they want to come play for. I mean, it's a good city. It's a good-looking team. They're making all these additions. They're investing in this team. We have seen, and if, you know, I know Bryce Harper's rookie year wasn't until 2012, so he wasn't around for that 07-11 run, but if he has seen highlights, you know, he's a baseball fan. He knows that this stadium can get full and loud. And for most of 2012, frankly, the stadium was sold out. This town falls in love with baseball when this team is competitive. And you get Bryce Harper on this team, those seats are going to be filled night in and night out. And so you would think this is just one more brick in the wall to convince Bryce Harper and Manny Machado that Philadelphia should be not just a desirable destination to play, but one of the most desirable destinations to play in baseball. We heard JT Realmuto say as much. And granted, he was happy to get traded from Miami. That guy was dying to get out of Miami in the worst way possible. And he mentioned at his news conference on Tuesday that the day he found out about the trade, he packed up the family and hopped in the car and drove 17 or 18 miles, I forget what it was, drove overnight to get to Clearwater so that he could be there to start spring training with the rest of the guys. He wants to be in Philadelphia. And I would think that the rest of these guys would want that too. And I realize they're holding out for the best deal. I truly do. I get that, you know, that Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, this is supposed to be their life-changing contract, and they want to make Giancarlo Stanton money. And I don't think it's going to happen. But I certainly can't imagine choosing a worse team, a team that is not nearly as close to being ready to compete as the Phillies are, for a team like the Phils, who are just rolling right now. You look at all the additions they've made this offseason, the Realmuto trade, the Segura trade, getting Robertson, getting McCutcheon, and adding Bryce Harper would just be the cherry on top. Bob Nightingale of USA Today reported earlier this week that it was down to two teams for Harper, the Giants and Phillies. The Giants are reportedly offering something in the 4 to 5 year range, maybe the 5 to 6 year range at $30 million a season, something like that. But they have come out and said that they do not plan to offer Bryce Harper the kind of long-term contract that he's seeking. And John Heyman reported this week, and again, this is Nightingale and Heyman, so who knows how much of this we can actually believe. But they both made it pretty clear that Harper is not going to sign a short-term deal. Now, is short-term deal the same as six-year deal? Does he consider that short-term? Or is short-term 2 or 3 years or 1 year? And that's the question we're not really sure about. But it doesn't seem as though anybody's offered 10 years, at the very least. One would think that if the Phillies had offered him the 10-year deal worth $30 million, $32 million a season, that would have already been signed. So that has likely not been offered. That might be where the Phillies have to go. But for right now, that they do not seem to have that kind of offer right now. And, you know, when you just compare, and I wrote about this for The Good Fight, when you compare Philadelphia and San Francisco, it's not even close. I mean, I get that Harper probably thinks that San Francisco is a beautiful city with beautiful views, and when you're uber rich, it doesn't matter to you that San Francisco is super expensive. And maybe he's going to be making so much money that he's not going to care about the California sales tax, which dwarfs Philadelphia's city wage tax. So you're looking at Oracle Park. Let's just look at the ballparks for a second. Oracle Park was the second worst home run ballpark in baseball last year, and the years before that, it ranked dead last. That doesn't seem very conducive to Harper's offensive totals. Citizens Bank Park, meanwhile, ranked fourth best. Harper has raked in Philly during his career. A 930 career OPS with 14 homers in 50 games in Philadelphia. In San Francisco, he's played 19 games there. His career OPS is 588. He's got two home runs there. Odd Shark has set the over-under for San Francisco wins without Harper at 73.5. This is not a good baseball team, kids. Now, adding Harper would certainly make the Giants better, but that pushes them up to about, let's see, from 74 to 78 wins. 79 wins. That's not close to being a playoff contender. Not in the National League West. And you look at the latest World Series odds from Bet Online. The Phillies currently sit at 10-1. That's the fifth best odds to win the World Series in all of baseball. Now, I do believe that those odds are probably baking Harper or Machado into the cake. But even so, Harper should look at this and say, man, this is truly a team that's a World Series contender. They also want to pay me more than anybody else, we're assuming. And I rake in that ballpark. And not only that, Philadelphia is not a hole in the earth. It's a great city. It's a lot like Washington, D.C. I'm not going to lie to you. I work in Washington, D.C. I've worked here for 14, 15 years. There's more monuments in Washington, D.C., and Washington, D.C. is a little bit cleaner in the downtown area. But in Philadelphia, Philadelphia's a great city. There's so much to do. There's so much to see. I mean, and he knows that. So, I mean, obviously, much of what he's doing right now is Scott Boras posturing, trying to get the best deal, probably trying to shake another couple years out of the Phillies. But you look at the World Series odds, when you combine the city and the ballpark and the state of these two teams, the Phillies are at 10-1 odds, fifth best in baseball. That is just the only teams ahead of them are the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Astros, and the Dodgers. Only one team in the National League is ahead of the Phillies, the Dodgers. The Phillies are ahead of the Cubs, the Brewers, the Cardinals, and the Braves. The Braves, Mets, and Nats are all behind them at 16-1 odds. The Nats are low, by the way. 16-1 is low for the Nationals. But I was looking at San Francisco. They're like 66-1 to win the World Series. Bryce, what are you doing, man? Make the call. Do it. Do the deal. And I have said this on previous podcasts. The Phillies need to get this done. They need to get this done. You know what? I don't even care anymore if they overpay. I don't care anymore. We get him here. Don't let him think about this too much longer. Don't give him a reason to think about going to San Francisco for less years and less money. Now, I will say that the whole reason Bryce Harper signs with Scott Boras is to get the best contract. That's the reason that you hire Scott Boras to be your agent. You don't hire Scott Boras to be your agent so that he can find you a city you really like, maybe for less money, maybe for fewer years, but you don't go to Scott Boras to find you the best quality of life home. You go to Scott Boras. You sign him as your agent because he is good at getting the most value out of teams. You go with Scott Boras as your agent because he's the guy that's going to get you the biggest money deal possible. And that's clearly what Boras is doing right now, or trying to do. But we've seen in recent seasons that teams just have not budged. The Red Sox didn't budge all that much with J.D. Martinez last year. The Phillies really didn't budge with Jake Arrieta last year on a 3-year deal. They probably ended up paying a little bit more than they initially agreed to, but I think both sides held firm on the years, and maybe that's the game the Phillies are playing again this year. But Bryce Harper is too important. Bryce Harper is too important. Given all of the things this team has done this offseason, so many of the great moves and the signings that they've made, they're all going to seem like a waste to people. Not necessarily to me, but it will be a failure if they don't get Bryce Harper. I know I said last week that I didn't think the offseason would be a failure. I do think this team is better. They've accomplished so much. But it's going to feel like a failure because the number one stated goal, and maybe not outright by the Phillies. Andy McPhail came out right from the jump and tried to throw cold water on us. But we know that this team's main goal was to get Bryce Harper or Manny Machado this offseason. And if they don't land one of them, it's going to be a massive disappointment, even with all of the great things that they've done this offseason, how better they've made themselves. They have to get one of these guys. And so I know a lot of people are thinking, well, the Phillies are in a great bargaining position. They are, but there is pressure from the fan base, including myself, to get this done. And I don't care if it's got to be 10 years and 325. They care. I'm sure they care. I don't. It's not my money. Sign him. Convince him to play in Philadelphia. I don't care if Philadelphia is his number one destination. He doesn't have to, you know, he doesn't have to go dancing in the streets when he arrives here because he's so happy to be here. I don't care about that. You get him to Philadelphia, you make him the highest paid player in baseball, you surround him with all of the talent they already have. This is a World Series team. This is a World Series contender right from opening day. Do it. Stop goofing around. Get him in Philadelphia, please. Make the Godfather offer. Make him the deal he can't refuse. We're all going crazy here, guys. This is just, it's too much. It's gone on too long. Bryce Harper needs to come to Philadelphia to finish what has been a tremendous offseason, and that was only accentuated and punctuated by the signing of Aaron Nola to that contract extension earlier on Wednesday. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to Megan Montemuro, Phillies beat writer for The Athletic. She's going to talk to us about Nola, going to talk to us about a couple injured Phillies pitchers, and some other stuff Gabe Kapler had to say, as well as the latest on Bryce Harper. That's up next, right here on Hittin' Season. And joining us to talk about what Gabe Kapler said at his news conference with reporters down in Clearwater today, and a little bit about the Aaron Nola extension, and we'll talk some Bryce Harper, of course. We can't not talk about Bryce Harper. Megan Montemuro, Phillies beat writer for The Athletic. Again, you can follow Megan on Twitter at @M_Montemuro. Megan, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well, and I know you're going to be heading down to Clearwater here in the next day or so. Are you looking forward to heading back down to Florida, getting out of the cold for a little while?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you head down to Florida, you know, baseball's back, and obviously, I always look forward to that. So, yeah, there you go.
Well, we're looking forward to reading your stuff once you get down there and get all settled in. But obviously, there was some news going on down there as we record this on Wednesday night. Earlier today, Gabe Kapler met with the media. But even before Gabe Kapler sat down to talk with reporters, we got some real big news in the late morning, early afternoon. Aaron Nola signing a four-year extension with the Phillies. We were all hoping that this would happen, that they would be able to avoid the arbitration hearing, which was scheduled for Thursday. And as you look through the numbers, as you break it all down, it really, to me, looks like a very team-friendly deal. What's your take on the Nola contract?
Yeah, I mean, if you're the Phillies, you have to be thrilled that you have covered a couple of his free agent seasons. You don't have to worry about arbitration coming up, which, you know, is going to be probably an awkward situation had they actually had to have held their meeting and their hearing tomorrow, Thursday. So, yeah, if you're the Phillies, you lock down your young ace. You know you have that guy at the top of the rotation for the next few years. And so you have to be thrilled that if you're the Phillies. And from Nola's perspective, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, after going to see where he's from and, you know, Baton Rouge, he's a smaller town kind of guy. And, you know, he doesn't necessarily live outside his means. And, you know, he really cares about his family and friends. And for him, something like this is obviously life-changing money for his family as well as himself. So I think for both sides, they both get what they want out of it. And that's kind of what you want in any sort of deal like this.
Yeah, the Phillies have control. They can buy out two of his free agent years if they want to and take him through his age 30 season. So really, they get Aaron Nola. They're guaranteed Aaron Nola if they want for his prime. And like you said, you know, a pitcher is always an injury away from his career being over. And so now he's set for life. So I know a lot of people look at the deal and think, man, he's worth a lot more than that. But there's something to be said for long-term security, and that's something Nola locked down. But I do think as we look at the deal a little bit, Megan, and we look at the free agent landscape as it exists right now, you know, I wonder if maybe Nola thought that this might be a way to kind of gain some security and guaranteed dollars. And I wonder if he would have made this deal even if free agency had been, you know, like it normally is. Do you think the current state of the economics in baseball was one of the reasons maybe why he decided to go ahead and sign this extension now?
Yeah, I don't think... I mean, he's going to talk tomorrow, so I guess maybe that question will be answered Thursday morning. But I think for him, every player kind of has to do what they think is best for them. I mean, I think it's very similar to you look at Scott Kingery's deal, where, you know, people say, hey, you know, if he turns out to be the player that people think he could be, you know, he's leaving money on the table kind of thing in the future. So I think it really is just player by player. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe that was somewhat in the back of his mind, or obviously you're at least aware of it. When we talked to him about two and a half weeks ago at some availability at the ballpark, you know, he said he hadn't really been paying attention that much to free agency, but he was aware of the plethora of free agents still available out there. So I think it's something that you're aware of, but I think ultimately a player has to decide what their comfort zone is and really, you know, banking on themselves to cash in, you know, in the future, because it's not like he's going to be super old if the option year gets picked up. So
right.
I would bet he will say that it didn't factor in too much because I think ultimately it's just a personal decision and a comfort, and clearly he likes Philadelphia and wants to make sure he's here for the next few years.
And that's great news, obviously, to lock in your ace like that for a long period of time and take you up through what should be his most productive year. So great job by the Phillies, and first to avoid arbitration and then get him signed and to know that you're going to have him for a number of years now. Now, after that came out, Gabe Kapler met with the media and made a little bit of news at the news conference. First by mentioning Jake Arrieta reportedly had knee surgery a couple of weeks ago during an offseason workout. They say he'll be ready for the regular season. But as I look at this, Megan, I see a guy who did not have a great season last year. He's an aging pitcher. Do you think that they'll enter the season with just their AAA starting pitching depth to kind of take them through any possible Arrieta setbacks? Or do you think they could look outside the organization at a guy like Dallas Keuchel or even Gio Gonzalez on a one-year deal just to hedge on the fact that Arrieta here is entering spring training with a little bit, and again, right now it's a minor setback?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to also depend, too, on, you know, the news with Eichhoff that apparently he's not 100%, which I'm sure they're disappointed with, and, you know, he's disappointed with having talked to him in the offseason about what he went through to have surgery and what they thought fixed the issue. So I think that actually maybe could have an impact as well, because if it's just Arrieta that you're worried about, okay, you still have some depth, but Eichhoff, you know, they viewed it as a depth guy too. And if you look at the options that you have, I mean, Eichhoff is the most proven of those bunch,
right,
and the most reliable when he's healthy. So it might be more a combination of those two things that maybe they look at somebody like Gio Gonzalez. I don't think Keuchel is very realistic unless those demands come way down. I think there's enough concerns about how he projects going forward that, you know, I think the Phillies have done a really good job using the resources outside of, you know, signing a Machado or Harper. So I don't know if that's really an area. You know, I don't know if they want to delve into another aging pitcher who relies on ground balls. That's a very similar profile to Arrieta. So I think there is some cause for concern, because when you look at Arrieta, his one of the biggest things for him is keeping his body in shape and, you know, doing everything he does to get ready for every fifth game. So I don't think you can overlook coming back from something like that, especially when you're dealing with knees and pitchers and how much lower body you need to really be successful and driving through the ball on your pitches. So I think it's a fair concern about whether he will actually be ready at the start of the season. I think the schedule does help them that first week with the off days built in, that it could maybe they do something similar to last year where, you know, he debuts 10 days or whatever into the season. But it's certainly worth watching, and it'll be interesting to see how he progresses and if he really does stay on track to be ready for the start of the season.
One of the other things Kapler talked about was that the third base position isn't necessarily, if they don't get Manny Machado, it's not necessarily going to go to Michael Franco, which is what I think we were all expecting as we entered 2019. He said that it could be an open competition between Franco and Scott Kingery. Now, all the reports are that Franco showed up in great shape, and Scott Kingery apparently bulked up a little bit in the offseason. But, of course, a small guy like Kingery, a lot of that weight's going to get shed during the hot summer months. But I wonder if is this more that they just are kind of out on Franco at this point and they don't really have any other option? Or are they trying to justify the Kingery contract that he signed a couple years ago? Or is this Kapler motivation of Franco or Kingery or some combination of all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it's more, hey, like, we want to bring out the best of these two guys. Let's make it let's say that there's competition there. And, you know, I think it's fair because you look at Kingery, where are you going to play him? I mean, there were definitely more opportunities in the outfield last year, but maybe he gets the one occasional start that McCutcheon's not in the lineup. But outside of that, I mean, Nick Williams, when he was healthy last year, was a good hitter, and he has some of the most raw power on that team. And you look at center field, and you have Odubel Herrera, and you have Roman Quinn. Like, you know, I don't think Kingery would really play much center anyway, but you look at what you have, and it's hard to find where you're going to be playing Kingery. So I think part of it comes down to that, where if you're going to get him at bats, where are you putting him? And third base is the most obvious option. Maybe, you know, they're just basing a lot more on splits. Obviously, it's really hard to gauge Kingery's profile because of how much he struggled last year.
And Franco has reverse splits, Megan. So it's kind of weird there, too. Yeah, they're both righties, but maybe that plays into it. They're both righties, and so Franco hits better against right-handers. Maybe that's how it works.
Yeah, and I mean, you look too defensively. I know Franco doesn't really have a lot of range, but he does have a great arm over there and really does a good job of fielding balls that are either bunts or where he has to charge in on them. So it's going to be interesting. I do think they're in a tough spot with Kingery because they're committed to the stance that they're not going to give away Cesar Hernandez, which I kind of get that point. And when Cesar is healthy, he's obviously one of their most consistent hitters, and he's a really appealing piece at the top of the lineup. Or even with this one, you can put him in the eighth spot or ninth spot, depending where you put the pitcher.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have a quandary of where to fit in carry, because there's really not an obvious spot.
Yeah, that major league deal he signed before last offseason, you really wonder if they wouldn't mind taking that back at this point. Not because they don't think he deserves it, but because they you're right, there's really no place to play him. And of course, there are questions about Kingery's ability, his arm strength to be able to play third base. But I think the spring, if you're going to test that out, the spring is the time to test that out. Once he gets, but I think once they see enough of Kingery in spring, they got to make a decision, a determination then. I don't want to see another learning process like he had to go through at shortstop in the regular season, because I do think that affected somewhat his offensive game too. And so that, I just don't want a repeat of last year where you've got this kid, you're trying to jam him into a hole here where you're trying to get some use out of his ability, but you're also hurting him by trying to play him at a position he's not comfortable with. So I guess it's a balance that Gabe Kapler and Matt Klintak are going to have to try and walk here.
Well, yeah, and too, I mean, you look at shortstop and third base, obviously same side of the infield, but shortstop is so much more demanding. You're so much more involved in relays and cutting the ball off. And so I think that was, I mean, he's talked about it. I mean, that was challenging. There was a lot of, you clearly could see that he was thinking out on the field defensively, which you don't want at any level, let alone in the big leagues. So
yeah.
I do think third base would be less challenging in terms of defense.
It's a reactionary position, but, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. It's more reactionary. For the most part, you're not the cut guy, in a few situations. So for the most part, it would be a spot where you let him react and, you know, hope that his offense makes up for it.
JT Realmuto was introduced by the team this week as well. He was pretty excited to get to Clearwater. I mean, he drove through the night as soon as he learned about the trade, which was tough. I mean, he said he packed up his wife and his... Well, not he packed up his wife. Obviously, he packed up his things. His wife voluntarily got in the car with him. But basically, they got in the car with a young child and drove all through the night. I mean, God bless her for making that trip. I'm not so sure most wives would be like, yeah, I'm all for an 18-hour trip overnight in the car with a young baby. That sounds like a great idea, but it certainly seems like he wants to be in Clearwater. And you know, it's kind of a contrast by what we're seeing with Machado and Harper, where they're taking forever to make up their mind. Realmuto really seems to want to be in Philadelphia, and I don't think it's just a matter of not Miami. You know, he seems to be embracing being a part of this team and being in this city. How much of an impact do you think he's going to have?
I mean, I think he could have a huge one. I mean, I think Alfaro, obviously everyone knows his upside, and maybe that hurts down the road, but you're getting a proven offensive commodity in Realmuto. He has an amazing arm, even better than Alfaro's in terms of looking at pop time, which is almost hard to believe. And so you're really getting a complete player at arguably the most important position on the field. I mean, the catcher is involved in literally every single play. And so I think it helps, too. I don't think you can discount the fact that being in Miami, he was in the same division. He had a chance to see this young team the last year or two in particular. And I think that builds some of the excitement, knowing what he saw over the last year and two. And he saw the development of some of these younger guys, especially the pitchers, took a huge step forward last year. So I think that excitement is genuine, and obviously, hitting in Citizens Bank Park for half your games certainly isn't going to hurt.
Well, speaking of hitting half your games at Citizens Bank Park, another guy that we're hoping will do that is, of course, Bryce Harper. And Bob Nightingale from USA Today reported that it's down to the Phillies and the San Francisco Giants. And I wrote for The Good Fight this week that there's no way that San Francisco makes more sense as a landing spot for Harper than Philadelphia. By all accounts, and we don't know what the Phillies have offered Harper, but the guess is that if they've offered something, it's more than the rumored 5 to 6 year, $30 million a year deal that the Giants have been kicking around. And the Giants have come out and basically said they're not interested in a 10-year deal for Bryce Harper here. So what's your read on Harper in Philadelphia right now? Because it seems as though the Phillies have the better ballpark. They have the better team, the better situation to win. You look at the latest Vegas odds. The Phillies, I think, are fifth in terms of World Series odds, and the Giants are way down the list. And, you know, unless Bryce Harper just doesn't like the actual city or just really loves the city of San Francisco, it's hard for me to see a scenario where he chooses that going to that team for less guaranteed money. So I'm curious as your read on where we are right now with Bryce.
I will say, I mean, the hardest thing is you don't really know what Machado and Harper are prioritizing. So, I mean, obviously San Francisco is a lot closer to Las Vegas, where, you know, he's from. Maybe he really does prefer the West Coast, and this is his opportunity to get back out that way once he signs. You know, what both those guys say that they were really looking for. But I do agree. I mean, perhaps I take it as more, you know, the Phillies haven't offered what either him or Machado want, because if they had, the offer would have been accepted at this point.
Yeah.
So I still think it's a bargaining tool because, like, yeah, I mean, the obvious thing is the Phillies can outspend any team.
Right. Megan, to interrupt you, at the end of the day, when you sign with Scott Boras to be your agent, you're typically not signing with Boras so that he can get you to the city that you really like for less money. You sign with Boras for the biggest contract, do you not?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously it's really hard to evaluate the two options, not knowing exactly, you know, what these deals are being offered. I agree that if it's a short-term deal, the Phillies seem more positioned to be winners sooner than the Giants, who knows what they're going to do this year. Whereas you look at the Phillies, you can feel confident that they should at least be in contention to win the division. So that's what makes me think that maybe there's other factors involved and that, yeah, I mean, I agree. I think the Phillies, for both those guys, should be an appealing destination. And maybe there's frustration on their part that the Phillies haven't offered what they want, knowing that the Phillies can offer what they want.
Right.
I think anytime public kind of negotiations kind of happen, or at least in terms of teams leaking that are finalists, I always take some cautious approach with that, because you know agents are trying to get their players the best deals. I think it's going to be interesting. I think it would certainly be a failure if the Phillies do not sign one of those guys. I don't think there's any excuse for them to be outbid. The only recourse for them that would help their cause is if a player, one of those two guys, said, "No, I really just wanted to play in this city," which, if that's the case, there's nothing you can really do about that. But certainly the offseason still feels incomplete without the Phillies signing one of those guys.
Yeah, and it's kind of made the rest of these really, really good signings and all the good news the Phillies have had over this offseason, really, it's kind of dampened some of the enthusiasm we should be feeling about all the offseason changes they've had so far, because, you know, we're still waiting for that, for the one big piece that everybody has been waiting for. So that's kind of a bummer. Last thing for you, I want to talk to you about Gabe Kapler real quick. Obviously, with how the season ended and the reports that recently surfaced over how he and the Dodgers allegedly handled multiple sexual assault claims. I know Kapler said that in the one case, he wasn't aware that a sexual assault had happened by the time when it was in front of his desk and that he had anything to do with it. But there is, of course, that other incident that was talked about. How much pressure is he under heading into this year?
I mean, I think the pressure obviously extends beyond that stuff. I mean, when I wrote basically that it just is another kind of concerning chapter of his past before he arrived with the Phillies, and that, you know, I don't think you can necessarily ignore all of that, because it keeps coming, seems like stuff keeps coming up from his time in LA.
Yeah.
But I think it goes beyond that. I mean, obviously he was an outside-the-box hire not because of that stuff, but because of his approach to the game and just how he operates. I mean, his lack of coaching experience. So, I mean, it was always a risky hire for those reasons. And he certainly needs to take steps this season to dispel those perceptions. They cannot afford to have a similar collapse. They cannot afford to come out and play terribly the first month or two. Like, this is a team now that is expected to win, and this is a team that should make the playoffs, or at the very least be in it until the very end. So I think there's a lot more pressure on him this year, because they're clearly building a team to beat Al, and that will obviously increase if they sign Machado or Harper. So I think he does have a lot to prove this season.
Well, listen, Megan, safe travels down to Clearwater, and we're looking forward to, again, reading your stuff in The Athletic. Follow Megan on Twitter, everybody, if you don't already, at @M_Montemuro. Megan, thanks so much for coming back on Hittin' Season. I really appreciate it.
No problem. You're welcome.
When we come back, we're going to talk about one existing Philly that really needs to step it up here in 2019 if this team is really going to take off, and we'll give you our stat of the week up next right here on Hittin' Season. All right, one final thought before we get out of here this week. I was thinking about some of the existing players on this team, and actually through my tweet deck saw a couple of one of my buddies, Joe Giglio from WIP, and Inquirer editor Gary Petoskey were talking about Rhys Hoskins on Twitter. Now, I kind of wanted to flesh out what they were talking a little bit, and they were discussing, that's the thing about Twitter, is you can eavesdrop on a couple of smart people's conversations. I was looking at, they were talking about the importance of Rhys Hoskins leveling his play out this year a little bit. And I think that's one of the things that we don't think a lot about when we talk about Rhys Hoskins, is that he is a good player. When you look at his stats at the end of the year, they're respectable, especially for a guy in his first full season in the big leagues. He had .246, .354, .496 with 34 home runs and an OPS plus of 125. That's a pretty, and he missed most of, the month of June with an injury. So 34 home runs in less than a full season is pretty good. And when Rhys Hoskins was hot, he carried the team. But when he was cold, which was for long stretches last year, Rhys Hoskins killed the offense. Now, that's what happens when you don't have a lot of offensive players. When you've got really one or two guys that really drive the offense, if one of them struggles, that's a problem. And Rhys Hoskins and Odubel Herrera was the other one, were both extremely streaky hitters last year. And so when they would get cold, the offense would just go into a death spiral. When they were hot, they could carry the offense for a couple of weeks. And he was hot early in the season. Through May 1st, his first 29 games, Hoskins hit .301, .455, .527 for a .981 OPS. He had four homers and nine doubles through May 1st. But then from May 2nd through May 29th, the bottom dropped out. His batting average fell from .301 to .233. His OPS dropped from .981 to .778. And he hit .157, .245, .289 over that 23-game stretch with just two home runs. Then he got hurt off a Kenley Jansen fastball that he fouled off his face. And when he came back, he got hot again. In 19 games, from June 9th through June 29th, he hit .324, .407, .716, with an OPS of .1123 and eight home runs. But then he was kind of hot and cold for a little bit. Again, a little bit of a dip here, a little bit of an increase there. Over the last 2 months of the season, Hoskins hit just .215, .319, .465 with 13 homers in 55 games and a .784 OPS. That's not great. I know we don't think a lot about batting average, but .215 is still bad. .215 is a bad batting average. That's bad. That's bad hitting. It's bad production. It's not enough. .784 OPS is not enough for a guy who's supposed to be your number three or your number four hitter. And Rhys Hoskins has to level this out. Now, perhaps moving to first base will help things out, because when you combine that offense with his defense last year in left field, it was a pretty bad season. Now, Baseball Reference had him at barely above replacement level. That's ridiculous. At first base, I do think he could be a potential MVP candidate. I know a lot of websites have him as kind of a dark horse guy, but his defense is going to have to be such that he's not taking anything away from his overall totals, of his overall WAR total, and he's going to have to really produce. He's going to have to be a stabilizer in the middle of the lineup. He can't be as streaky as he has been. He can't be hot for 3 weeks and then ice cold for a month and then red hot again for 3 weeks and then ice cold for 2.5 weeks. He can't do that. If he's going to be a middle of the order hitter, we have to see less of the extremes with Hoskins this year if he's going to be a building block and if he's going to get a contract extension like Aaron Nola did. It's easy for me to see why the Phillies haven't broached the subject with Rhys Hoskins yet. They don't know what they have in him just yet. I think Rhys Hoskins is going to be a very good hitter in this league. He's got a great eye at the plate. He has good at-bats. He has a lot of power. but he has got to figure out a way to not be an automatic out for weeks at a stretch. That's what's separating him from being a pretty good player to being an all-star. And he has the potential to be an all-star at first base. He has that ability. He needs to level it out and stop with the peaks and valleys if he's going to be that guy that the Phillies hope he can be. And now it's time for your stat of the week. I put out a request on Twitter for some people to give me some good Aaron Nola statistics, and I would give them credit here on the podcast if they do that. And I got a couple of good statistics that I'm gonna read out here. Jersey Josh, at Mr. Jersey Josh, tweeted at me. In 2018, Nola had a Baseball Reference wins above replacement of 10.5. Only four pitchers in Phillies history ever had a season with a WAR higher than 10.5. Charlie Buffington in 1888 and Steve Carlton in 1972, both at 12.1. Kid Gleason in 1890 at 11.9. And Grover Cleveland Alexander in 1915 at 10.9. Also, Tyler Brown at Tyler D. Brown 42 tweeted, Aaron Nola's 2018 was the third best season of the 21st century for any starting pitcher in terms of BWAR at 10.5, behind only 2000 Pedro Martinez, 11.7 WAR, and 2002 Randy Johnson at 10.7 WAR. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Megan Montemuro for coming on the podcast once again. She's such a good podcast pal. And folks, if you haven't done so, again, a reminder to please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast. Leave a rating and a review when you get a chance. 5-star ratings help very much in getting us back into the top 200 on Apple Podcasts top charts for sports and recreation. And don't forget to check out Continued Success this week with Justin and Liz. And keep an eye out for the new award-winning Dirty Inning, which will be coming out here in the next week or two. And Justin and Dr. Trevor Strunk always bring the good stuff on the Dirty Inning. Again, that's all on the Good Fight podcast feed. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.